Welcome to the Bridge Podcast, a digital worship service. We know that walking with the Lord isn't easy, and we hope this show is a way to come alongside you and offer a little extra weekly encouragement. Most of the content for the show was originally created for our BridgeBox subscription service. For more information, go to missionusa.com/BridgeBox.
Back. Everyone has bad habits. Everyone, everywhere, without exception. A lot of these bad habits are easy to ignore. These are the ones that are socially acceptable, that don't carry particularly stiff earthly consequences, and that don't generally interfere with our lives. I'm talking about things like drinking too much caffeine or carrying around a few extra pounds. But now, think about how rarely you see someone break one of these relatively minor bad habits. Seriously, think with me for a second. How many people do you know that have made a concrete change in their lifestyle and that are still unwavering about it, say, 2 years later? I'll bet that number is extremely small. It is for most of us. I mean, this is to say that changing even the smallest habits is incredibly difficult, and far more so than we like to admit. I dare say that there are a significant number of people in the world that have never really changed a single bad habit in their whole adult lives. It's just that hard. Now, contrast the challenge and lack of success we see in changing a relatively minor bad habit with the impossible task faced by people who are caught up in addiction. These men and women have had bad habits harden and coalesce into the pattern that's now etched in stone, literally burned into their neural pathways, controlling their every step and decision, with their body, mind, and spirit crying out for more. And yet, in spite of that, they still must change. Is that even possible? It is, and I know that it is, because I work with people who have overcome addictions. I'm blessed because these individuals are remarkable in ways most people are not. We've all joined a gym with the intention of getting in shape or at least losing those holiday pounds, and a few months later, we've all realized we haven't been since the third week of January. And that's without any overwhelming temptation dragging us away. For most of us, our principal opponent is just life, with its fatigue and distraction. But here in the inner city of Chicago, we work with people who achieve and accomplish what very few folks ever do. They make real, deep, and often all-encompassing changes. I've learned a lot from these men and women, both from their successes and their failures. There is a commonality in attitude and approach amongst those who ultimately succeed at making changes. A humility coupled with fearlessness, thankfulness, married to responsibility, compassion, mixed with realism. To be honest, the attitude of a person successfully working their recovery from addiction is so distinctive that I'm not sure I've ever seen it in another context. It's singular. By contrast, the characteristic of those who do not succeed in their recovery, at least not yet, is something I have definitely seen somewhere else, amongst relatively squared away Christians. When my staff and I are debriefing a ministry engagement, we discuss the folks we've met and interacted with. And when we're describing someone who's not yet prepared to make a significant change in his life, we say, he has another bit in him. A person in this place makes false and naive assumptions about recovery, and they are the exact same assumptions I hear from church-going Christians on Sunday morning. With that in mind, let's take a look at those assumptions. I give you 7 habits of people who are not going to change any of their habits. Number 1, my willpower is the strongest thing around. It can beat anything. Willpower never gave a short man the ability to slam dunk. We all know that, at least on an intellectual level. You can want it all you like, but physics are physics. But the truth is, we live in a culture that preaches anything is possible if you want it bad enough. Sports commentators say that the game went to the team that wanted it more. Celebrities look back on their rise to fame and say they refuse to take no for an answer. Preachers say that we can and should just stop it. But that isn't the way life works. The team that won the game had faster players and scored more points than the other guys. The celebrity was in the right place at the right time. And maybe the preacher gave up a sin that wasn't really much of a struggle for him. In the end, not only did willpower by itself not cause a success, it wasn't even the key factor. So, yeah, it sounds silly when you see it spelled out like that, but in our heads, the idea of willpower conquers all makes sense. Now, based on our past mistakes, screw-ups, and failures, human willpower ought to feel like the weakest and least reliable substance in the world. In other words, I know where willpower has gotten me previously, so me relying on me should sound like a bad idea every time. But it doesn't. Now here's where it gets tricky. Willpower by itself can't do very much. But our decision-making power, that is, our capacity to actively choose one thing over another, moment by moment, is incredibly important. Let's break that down. God can do amazing things in and through us when we decide to involve Him in the process. When we start asking God, "Where do you want me to go, and how do you want me to get there?" miraculous things will start to happen. When the Israelites came up against the walled, fortified, heavily armed city of Jericho, they had 3 options. They could run away in fear, which is what people do when they don't bother trying to make changes at all. They could rely on willpower and just do a frontal assault on the city because we want it more. And, of course, they would have been slaughtered. Or they could go and ask God what he thinks. You probably know the story, but in Joshua chapter 6, the Lord gives some very surprising instructions on how he wants the invasion of Jericho to go. And the Israelites listened and followed, and Joshua won the battle of Jericho. The victory wasn't about willpower. It was about decision-making power. Choosing to seek the wisdom from God and choosing to act on His instructions. Looking at it that way, victory is how we choose to get where we're going, as much as the destination itself. Number 2, all I need to do is read my Bible and stay positive. Few things are more powerful than avoidance and denial. And make no mistake, church folk regularly use scripture, church going, and even a shallow sort of one-sided prayer to avoid life and maintain that state of denial about the challenges they face. Positive thinking is good stuff, but for the passengers on the plane about to crash into the side of the mountain, all the positive thinking in the world will not change their situation one bit. We need to be able to take a measure of the enormity of the change we want to make, and we need to be realistic about the chances of perfect success. In other words, if we don't know and won't look at what we're up against, we can't possibly develop a strategy to defeat it. All too often, however, I see people who think that positive, pie-in-the-sky thinking is how they'll succeed. In fact, they believe that all the hard facts will only bum them out. The problem here is that positivity is what you use when you've got a good plan. In other words, any wise plan for growth will go through periods where the payoff isn't yet visible. And in those moments, we need to be positive to encourage ourselves that we're making a smart investment of time and resources, and that in time, we will reap a harvest. Being positive about a foolish plan or no plan only sets you up for failure. Telling yourself to keep on going when you're headed in the wrong direction will only lead you further off course. All this leads to the need for a plan. Number three, I probably don't need wisdom. I get asked questions related to changing habits and getting rid of addictions all the time. But these questions almost always miss the point. People ask me, how do I stay intense? How do I maintain focus? How do I not lose heart? How do I stay positive? It all adds up to, how can I make this change in my own strength, even though that hasn't worked 100 times in a row? Almost never will anyone come up to me and say, I feel like I must have my head on backwards. I clearly need to work a better strategy for overcoming my bad habits. And see, that strategy piece is what the Bible refers to as wisdom. And that, beloved, is what each of us needs desperately. In Luke 14, Jesus says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays a foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. If you don't know what you're facing, and if you don't know the cost of success, then you can't expect to succeed. If you've failed before, and you're too ashamed to examine the wreckage for clues on what went wrong, then you haven't even arrived at learning the hard way. You actually aren't learning at all. I think some of us are afraid of wisdom, because receiving it requires admitting that we don't know and that we need someone to tell us. And it means letting someone in on the scary parts of our lives. But as it turns out, letting someone else in isn't just a requirement of getting wisdom. It's actually an important thing in its own right. For God so